Live from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guests, comedians and actors Craig Frazier and Dinah Leffert.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And musical guest Grant Malloy Smith. I am Mark Leisure, and now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Craig, you can stop laughing now. I don't know what that's about at the top of the show. Normally you're making us laugh, so I don't know what that's about. But anyway, I have to say we are playing actually on this day, Dorothy's birthday. Our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, I want to say from the top of the show, happy birthday, Dorothy.
Happy birthday, Dorothy.
we were going to try and pre-record this show and not have her work today, but she is working with us because it's just, thank you. Oh, she's clapping. Aw. And you
smiling.
Look beautiful today, actually.
And looking beautiful.
In your birthday clothes. Or not in your birthday suit, in your birthday clothes. She has new birthday clothes. Okay. So, you know, it's interesting because today we're obviously going to be talking to comedian Craig Frazier, to comedian Dinah Leffert, and then later on we're going to have music by Grant Malloy Smith, and so it's all a great show. But one of the topics we're going to talk about is, since we have the pleasure of having already worked with and going to be working with this coming Saturday, not only Craig Frazier and Dinah Leffert, but Rick Overton, where's my brain?
Cato Kaelin.
Thank you, Cato Kaelin.
Craig Frazier.
Craig, I already said Craig Frazier. I'm missing somebody. Matt Murray. Is that all of us? Okay, yeah. So, you know, and of course, Mark Leisure and myself. So, because we're going to be doing the Life Improvement Workshop and the What If Experience here in LA at the Hollywood Improv, famous Hollywood Improv. We're going to be talking a little bit about improv. So some people say, so how does this really apply? I like to say every moment is an improv moment. Every moment is an improv moment. And interestingly enough, just last night was a really fine example. So I was having dinner with some friends, which is a rare occasion because I don't take time out for myself like in that way. And it was at a private house with about 10 of us around who rarely get to see each other. And it was one of these, wow, I can't believe I got everybody together kind of moments that the hostess was like saying. And we were sitting around joking and I said, oh, you got to see this video. And I turned on my phone, which it had been off at that point, literally off. I turned on my phone so that I could Google a video, and I had two texts from a friend who had misinterpreted or misunderstood something and come to a conclusion that was not correct, and said, and it was like blow up the phone time. And I had this moment like, excuse me, everybody, I have to take a moment and tend to this. It's kind of an emergency. Because I really cared about the person. And it was interesting because, like, for the first time in LA, nobody had taken out their phones. Nobody had done, and I was the one who broke that moment. And I walked away for this call, and I tried to make the call. I made a couple other calls, couldn't get through, blah, blah, blah. And I came back to the table and had to decide whether I share that moment with everybody at the table. And I looked around, and since I said emergency, everybody kind of looked at me and was like, is everything okay? And I thought, what do I do? So I shared. And that was either my mistake or how I handled that improv moment. I could have not shared. I could have said, oh, yeah, everything's fine. I could have just kind of, I could have, and I didn't go into detail, but it did disrupt for a moment. But then it ended up turning into a really beautiful thing where everybody kind of said, hey, you know, have you thought about this? And hey, you know, have you thought about that? And I kind of let that go on for a moment. Everybody kind of was with me. And then I said, okay, let's change the subject. Okay. And I tried to bring back the humor and everything that where we were before. So it was like one improv moment after the other, me turning on the phone. Do I answer these texts? Do I make these calls? Do I separate myself from the table? At each step of, do I share with these people? At each step of the way, I could have made a different decision that could have been maybe better or maybe could have been worse. Like I might have decided to just leave at that point because I just couldn't handle it. Whatever it was kind of that grave, but I didn't. So, you know, it's like we are faced with those moments many times a day. And being able to know this is one of those moments that can make or break the situation and all that, and being able to walk through the tools that we work with people during the improv workshop, but that these comedians work with every single day on their craft and on stage is like the thing that's the secret sauce here. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about that. And of course, just have fun with our friends and all that and more when we come back on the Life Changes Show.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sharon Stone, and Alex Gray on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. Or you can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
You know, I have to say, I'm sitting here with Mark Leger, and I have to say, Mark, I've learned so much just being around these people.
Which people?
The comedian people.
Oh, the comedian people.
You know, those people. Seriously, they work their craft. I mean,
yeah,
they're serious.
Well, they really do, and that's the way it integrates with what we're doing and really being able to carry forward. I mean, you've seen it in so many, you know, comedians in the past, and so many bring their messages in different ways, or they deal with their tragedy by, you know, using humor and that. But to kind of cross over into the world that we spend every day in, which is transformation and change, it's really neat to see how seamless it is.
You know, it's interesting you should say that, because normally comedy comes from tragedy. And that's what I've learned from a lot of comedians that have tragic lives growing up and all that stuff. And so like some Jewish comedians have told me, we laugh not to cry, right? And so so it's interesting. Craig Frazier's story is actually different. And so what I've come to think is that that comedy comes from extremes. Actually, let's hear from Craig, because I think...
Good idea.
Yeah, I think we're on to something here.
Although I think he wants you to tell another story.
Please do.
Okay, so here's my story. He's a comedian, he's an actor, and he's a winner of the Miller Lite National Comedy Search. And he just got back from doing a tour with George Lopez. Did you flew back? Are your arms tired?
Yes, they are. Thank you guys for having me at the Life Changing Show. I'm hoping to get my life changed here with you today.
Yeah, thank you. Your life change.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Actually, I was on the road with D.L. Hughley, where we did they have a black and brown comedy tour with George Lopez, D.L. Hughley, Cedric Entertainer. So there's a great, great lineup that they're doing over there. Yeah, really good.
Nice. Thanks. So you must have heard me talking about you. So because one would assume like tragedy and then humor. So tell me.
Just because I'm black, that's got to be tragic.
No, okay, that's not.
I'm just playing around. No, I got, just to give you a background, where I went to school at Howard University studying marketing. I got started in comedy. Well, I used to be a campus pal, which kind of helped bring in the new freshmen, get them acquainted to the campus, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
It was really just to pick up girls, but it was cool.
freshman girls.
We used to do a talent show. We used to do talent shows. We put something together for the kids. You know, we did stuff for them. And I did some sketch comedy we did. So one guy that was the president of the business school said, "Hey, Craig, can you do some comedy for the Miss Howard pageant?" I was like, "Cool, sure." Now, I've never done comedy before. Wrote some stuff down. Now, Howard is kind of like the Apollo Theater, where like you get on stage, if you're not funny, they're gonna boo the best out of you, right? So I went there, did some gigs. You know, talking about one thing about comedy, you have to do stuff that you can relate to your audience with. You know, so I did stuff about college, that type of thing.
Sure,
went over great. And so after that, I decided to start doing comedy. Now, you were talking about the tragedy and that kind of stuff, but I grew up in an upper middle class family. It was the best place to live in America, called Morristown, New Jersey. It was like Mayberry. You could keep your doors open. You know, the police. I didn't know what racism was. I mean, my neighbors were Jewish. So the thing of people saying that you experience a lot of racism. So I was like, no, didn't know what it was. I mean, the police would pull me over and they're like, "We've got reports that this car is stolen." I'm like, "Oh, well, thank you, officer, for letting me know that the car was stolen," because I had no idea. But as I got older, I'm like, "Oh, wow, he pulled me over because I was in a Cadillac with my two other black friends." And that's, you know, later on in life, I was like, wow, okay, so there is some racism that comes about. And even dating girls in high school, where I was like, and it was about two black girls in my class. So I was going out trying to date white girls, and then, you know, a couple girls would say, "Hey, my dad doesn't want you calling here anymore." I'm like, what did I do? So I couldn't fathom what that whole thing. Wow. So that's where it was. But going on with the comedy, I started doing the clubs. Then there was a talent search. It was called the Metro DC Talent Search. It was kind of like Star Search. So you had dancers, singers, everybody in the category. So each category had a winner. So I won my category of comedy, and then they had one overall winner, and I won that category.
Oh.
So from there, I got a chance to go tour with Patti LaBelle. I was on the road with her, opened up for her.
Funny.
And while I was on the road with her, Keenan Ivory Wayne saw me at a show performing and then offered me a job on In Living Color.
I should have mentioned all that. You've done a ton of shows.
Yeah, Living Color, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Moesha, just blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Another show.
And the George Lopez show.
Yeah, so, then doing that was like, that was probably my best training for comedy, because as a warm-up, I don't know if you've ever been to a live taping of a show.
Yeah.
Now, Living Color was different from everything else because it wasn't like the sketch comedy. It wasn't like a serious comedy which just ran from scene to scene. It was each new sketch each time. So we'd load audience in at 6 o'clock, and 9 times out of 10 wouldn't get out there till 2 a.m. So I'm having to tell jokes, people upbeat, keep them laughing for that long a time. And I'm just like, why are you people still here? It's 2 a.m. In between scenes doing stuff. So that gave me my training per se, where if I did a crowd with a small crowd, it didn't affect. Because a lot of times when you do big stadium stuff, I did big stadium tours, and you're like, you know, you get that rush. And so then when you go from a stadium to a club, you know, you don't get that same rush. Like, wow, I'm doing this. Yeah. The jokes are funny. I know they're funny. But, you know, you have to be able to overcome that to say, hey, let me keep it going. So that's kind of what I've been doing from there. I've just been rocking and rolling.
Okay, so if it doesn't come from tragedy, where does your humor come from?
Oh, my father was probably the funniest guy I know. So he went to Penn, University of Penn, had his master's. But he was very serious. But then on the other hand, him and his brothers were just hilarious. When these three got together, it would be just comedy that you can't write this stuff. So I think my humor came from him. And then, you know, once I started doing comedy, like I said, I would just take in stuff that typical stuff. I never had, when I first started doing comedy, I remember going doing a show at the Comedy Store. And that's another thing when I dealt with racism per se, of comedy racism, because I remember doing a show there. It was probably like 5, 6, 7, 8 black comics on the stage. Just real well-known ones now, like Robin Harris, Robert Townsend, all of them on the show. Everybody killing, boom, 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 killing. And I remember Mitzi coming up to me after the show, saying, "Well, you know, I don't think you're ready for the Comedy Store yet." So I was like, "Okay, she don't think I'm ready. You know, she's got this club. I'll go
this
work hard."
This is right before you're going on?
No, this is after I went off.
Oh, okay.
They're like, "Well, I don't, you know, because, you know, you can just kind of get feedback."
Yeah.
And I remember a white comedian got up there, and he was horrible, horrific. And I just happened to be next to her when she was talking to him, like, "Oh, you can come back, play my club anytime." I was like, Wow. I said, okay. But that's when, back in the day, everybody was like, "Well, what's your POV? What's your point of view? What's your, you know?" And I'm like, funny is funny. So, I mean, they wanted to put you in a box of saying, okay, this is what you do. This is your shtick. This is how you do your shtick, da, 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 da. Mm-hmm. So when you just did random stuff, you did funny life material, it was like that didn't go well with them.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's interesting.
But you obviously you broke out of that. When we come back, I want to talk about your current comedy and because there's a message in your comedy. So let's do that when we come back here.
Perfect.
And then after that, Dinah's going to join us, and then it'll be pandemonium.
Sounds good.
All on the Life Changes Show right after this.
Thank you.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of four and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him, then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up. A second grader named Chandler said, I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life. And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, this is a great story. Bravo, Shadow. The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino on our archive page at LifeChangesNetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo Volta, just sitting here with Mark Legere, and Craig Frazier is in. What's that?
I said, thank you for having me.
Okay, I hadn't even finished saying you were with us.
He's in the house.
I almost, you know, earlier we were talking about, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but improv moment. So somebody actually introduced you. Tell us. Sorry, can you tell us?
The story. Okay, so I'm doing a cruise ship. And it's like, you know, it's my first cruise ship. And they're telling me, you know, the first show, you got to be squeaky clean. You can't do anything, you know. And then the second show is a night show. And you can do more stuff. You know, so some woman from Britain, I guess, is introducing me. And she's like, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a big round of applause for Craig Ferguson. And I'm like, are you kidding me, woman? You got one job to do. One job and to pronounce a daggone name. And you messed mine up. Neither to say they didn't have me come back on the cruise again because they were like, "Oh, you were too blue, you were too dirty." It was like I said I only cussed at the Late Show when you said it was an adult only show and have, you know, whatever stuff. So those cruises, you got to be, you know, we're in the world of PC correct, and like Jerry Seinfeld says, I won't do college anymore because you got to be PC correct because, you know, now we have to give kids participation trophy. So it's like, you lost, you're a loser, but we're going to give you a trophy to show that you don't have to do any better. What you did was the best. So it's like, it's society is really have some problems.
Well, you have a kid, right?
Yeah, my daughter's 27, 28,
yeah,
29. I may have a couple kids in Thailand I don't know about, but that's a whole new.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
They have participation trophy. So,
I was going to say, tell us about your comedy, but I think we just got a taste of it. So what is your message during your comedy bits right now?
I'm more audience, who my audience is. Because, I mean, I've done church shows. I've done regular shows. Now, I've been touring with D.L. Hughley for a lot. So he's got a good mixed crowd, older adults crowd. So I guess I kind of send, I talk about marriage. I talk about animals. I talk about just life stuff that they can go through. So just, I want everybody, when they hear the joke, they say, that's something that I can relate to, or right. something that I've seen, you right. know, I've seen that thing. So that's one of kind of how I like to keep everything flowing.
So it's kind of, there's always, do you kind of end like with a positive, like it's kind of like you wrap it up kind of, because I get the feeling, because you were talking about Black comedians and some of what they do, right?
Yeah.
And then how yours wasn't accepted because you weren't doing that, right? So yours is kind of like, I'm just me. And I mean, you do mention some of it, but it's not.
It all depends where I'm at. Usually I end with the funniest bits I got, which is some sex stuff, which is always killer stuff. But, you know, I said I try to send type of message of, you know, hey, you can do what you want to do. You can be successful. But I just want people with their 20, 30 minutes there with me, I want them just to forget about reality per se. Mm-hmm. Try to give them, because they're here to pay in their dollars. I want them to be able to say, come to, you know, when you're done the show, they say, man, you were so funny. You did a great job. I love, you know, you made me laugh. Mm-hmm. That's the best, I guess, message I get to them. Say, hey, you guys, I'm here to, I'm
made him laugh, made him feel good.
Made you laugh, feel good. You spent all your money, you know. And I see a lot of comedians, or even a lot of well-known comedians per se, that, you know, they just come in and they mail it in. You know, they get that first 10 minutes of laugh because of who they are. And then after that, you're like, oh my God, you're getting paid and you are just either on stage drunk or whatever they're doing. It's just, it gets kind of crazy. So, and I said, you're cheating these people out of what they, you know. What they're getting.
Yeah, sure. It's hard to judge. I mean, because people get tired and people, you know, it's a very demanding, you know, what especially what you all do.
Yeah.
It's very demanding. So it's hard to judge where they are at that point. But I totally respect and get what you're saying.
Yeah, you want to leave them coming wanting more. Because some guys, I don't know whose comedy show I was at, but this guy was doing like 3 or 4 hours on stage. I was like, dude, you can only do so. They're going to laugh so much.
And like you said, the way that things have changed, and there's so much judgment and PC, you know, correctness, mm-hmm. that, you know, the big box has got much smaller, and then that's been chopped up into all sorts of other little boxes. It's got to be hard to navigate that, you know.
It gets crazy. And, I mean, the biggest problem you have is, as a comedian, is dealing with drunks. I mean, you can't, no matter what you say or try to say to a drunk, it doesn't matter. Or you got people that are, I've had a time where I've messed with people in the audience. I've talked about people, and these guys want to fight you over, you know, because you made a joke about you. It's like you're at a comedy club. Why are you getting offended because I teased you? But, you know, they want to fight.
And why are you sitting in the front row?
Exactly. Exactly. And then they get mad about this, or people will walk out because they got offended by something. So it's like you can only, you know, now I remember I did some for the military, and they're like giving me a list of, you can say this, you can't say that, you can do this, you can't do that. I was like, well, good night then.
I'm sure Dinah won't have an opinion when she comes in, because she's never offended anyone.
Yeah, I'm like, good night then. So because that was the whole PC
that
correctness.
Was your comedy.
You can't say, I was like, well, good evening, everybody, good night, because I got nothing to say, because you don't want to say there.
Okay, you know, I have to say, since you mentioned, I mentioned the people in the front row, but you said people getting offended. I have to say that I've been to some shows, like actually live present at the shows, mm-hmm. that were not cheap to get into.
Right.
And I wasn't even sitting anywhere near the front row.
Right.
Right. So then there are the people that, in order to sit in the front row, they must know somebody or pay a lot of money to sit there. So I'm just thinking about some guy out with his girlfriend or whatever. And then I have the comedian asking them, like, what are you two, married, whatever?
Right.
And then like, half of their show is about them. And I'm thinking, that's
some
rough.
Well, you know, there's some comedians that they're, I mean, it's, for example, I don't know if you know Ian Bagg. His show is all about audience just interacting. He doesn't really have an act, but he was on, you know, like the Last Comic Standing. But he, you know, all he does is just, where are you from, what are you doing? And then he does some crazy stick. But my thing, whole thing, when you're teasing with the audience, you can do a little bit of that. That's cool to get it done. But see, the problem is when you start teasing somebody, and then you don't let go of it. See, my thing is hit them, give them a little something, move on. That's when, I mean, I've seen a guy get knocked out on stage for, here he goes, doing stuff with, boom, 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 talking, you know, just, you know, it's like just poking a person. The guy's like, dude, you better stop. And
talk about improv moment.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, when they called the ambulance, that was the improv.
Wrong choice.
That was one of those moments.
I made the wrong choice.
Like, because I think he beat up him and his security guards. So I was like, ooh, okay, that's
tough. You see, one of the reasons why you're perfect for Life Improvement Workshop that we're doing this Saturday at the Hollywood Improv is because look at that. What you said, for example, of what was it, A Living Color, right? I mean, 6 to 2. So, wow. 6 to 2. And you're having to do jokes. tell honestly, there were jokes that didn't land, right?
Well, a lot of them didn't, because they would bring like buy audiences. They would have people come from like the reform school or people from rehab houses, you know. So the only way I knew to keep people going was I would always have stuff to give away. Now the show never provided me stuff. I would just get CDs and stuff, that just old unknown stuff. Okay, because I could be like, "Hey, look, we got the new Michael Jackson." They're like, "Hey," and I give it to them, and it's like, Bob's Burger House. But they didn't care. As long as it was free, they were like so excited to get free stuff. I could say, "I got some doo doo." All right, yeah, give it to me. So that's one thing I found. And then I would get candy too, because they never fed the people. They would sit there.
What kind of doo doo?
I don't know what kind of was, but they would do it. But yeah, I mean, that was the thing. Give them some for free. They would love it. And then I would have like dance contests. That was another thing I had problems with society, with some people. I would do dance contests. And some of these guys would have their kids dancing who are like maybe 6, 7 years old, doing just some of the nastiest dances. And the parents are like, go, Chumika, go. It's like, oh, Lord, don't do. Your child is now grinding on the floor. It's like, I can see who's going to be pregnant soon. This little one here.
No. And what did you say?
I didn't say anything, because I was like,
I mean, what can you say?
What can you say? Because I knew they were from the reform house, so I couldn't even say anything to them.
Now, that's an interesting point. We could do a whole show on that. The beauty pageant stuff and all of that. I mean,
the hover parents.
The jokes that didn't land, you learn from that. It's like, okay, this audience, this, that. And I'm not saying that you did a lot of that. I'm just saying that there's a lot of growth and change that has to happen immediately.
I tell people, the young comics always come and ask me, get 5 minutes of material. Get 5 minutes, work on it. Now, just because you do it once, you do it twice, it doesn't go, doesn't necessarily mean it's not a funny bit. Because, I mean, I've had stuff that kills, and then you do it in front of crowd. Sometimes the crowd is just really, really weird. I know I was in Iowa doing a show somewhere, but they got stuff there. But once you can do what I do now, is I was like, how can I take this bit and then make it better or make it funnier? What can I add on to it?
Or make it work for them.
For them, exactly. Yeah. So that's the key. Because, I mean, I've had bits that I've done. I mean, I remember a couple first bits. I remember another comic came to me and said, "Hey, man, I love that bit you did on this." I was like, wow, I totally forgot that bit. You know, I even did that. But, you know, stuff can be, you can do it over. Now, the good thing about comedy is you can do your same bit routine over and over, because you're doing different audiences every night. So it's not like, you know, you gotta be like, well, you gotta get different materials. Like, well, it's the same audience, but you want to add on stuff and keep stuff that's topical and relevant and fresh. That's what you want to do.
And what about with YouTube? Is that becoming an issue? Like, people watching you over and over on YouTube and then seeing you live?
No, because people always have. I mean, like I said, I can watch Richard Pryor over and over again. There's certain bits that people just love, just like. You know, I do a bit about a girl stuttering while having sex, which is just so hilarious.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah,
we'll save it.
I haven't posted that on there. But it's like people are like, oh my god, I was peeing in my pants. That was so funny, you know. And some of the funniest stuff I get is dealing with. I do bits on like dogs and animals, and I said people are like, you know, they don't mess with a dog lover, a dog person. I said, my ex wife used to get pissed off at me because I bought the wrong dog food for the dog, and so I was like, wait a minute, this dog is sitting here all day, and I see him eating his own stuff, his own poop, but you want me to spend $80 on some dog food? The science, diet, natural stuff on his stuff. So it's, you know, then you deal with the vet and all the stuff. So yeah, everybody has an animal more than likely. So they'll raise their hand. I love.
Technically,
my dog.
His dog poop comes from the science food.
Science diet. Yeah, so. But you could put, like I said, I always tell them, like, if they're hungry enough, now cats are different. Cats get real picky about stuff, because you know they'll talk to you if they, you know, you don't give them the right food. They're like, meow, meow, meow. I don't eat this stuff. Give me some new stuff. So.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that.
We're learning a lot today.
I hope Peter doesn't boycott your show now.
You're telling it like it is. Well, I'm more concerned about the advertising that we just lost from the science dog.
You know, I know. Okay, all my messages were not approved by the Life Changing Show. Thank you. They are not held responsible. I should have put a disclaimer before I came on here. I'm sorry.
Okay, so when we come back,
Craig will not be here. Thank you.
We don't think you're quite ready for the life changes.
I got a funny story about advertisers when we come back.
Okay.
I can tell you about
that. When we come back, yeah, we're going to have a funny story about advertising by Craig Frazier. And we will be joined in the studio by comedian and actress Dinah Leffert, all when we come back here on the Life Changes Show right after this.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Gary Zukav, and Kyle Cease, on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and at Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back, and
Craig is still here, unfortunately. So
Craig is still here. Mark Leger is still here. Not unfortunately, very fortunately. And fortunately, we have comedian, actress, and so much more. Dinah Leffert joining us in the studio.
Everyone's lucky day.
It is, actually. It's been a great day. Yeah. We got to meet earlier, all of us, I just posted on Instagram, I don't know if you saw it, about the Life Improvement gang or team getting ready for Saturday, and that was fun.
I did see it. I would have picked a different one, but it was good.
You know, the problem was that I was in all the other ones, so I posted a picture that I wasn't in.
Why?
Well, I can't tell you. I didn't, because I wanted Chelsea in it. That's
are you
why.
The man behind the curtain?
I'm the one that took the picture. Anyway, so Craig was going to tell us.
Funny advertiser. A lot of people working on Living Color was just a fantastic, just great talent there. So a lot of people don't realize why the show kind of like our Keenan and them left, because it was so we had to write stuff so crazy in order for the censors to let stuff get on the air. And so when we did stuff, it was all about advertising. Advertisers like, we don't want you saying this, we don't want you doing this, don't do that. So advertising, where the money comes in, that controls the product. So if we didn't please them, you know, we had to do stuff that was here in order to get this on the air. So a lot of people don't know that little tidbit.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah. Cool. Do you censor yourself on stage at all?
Sometimes, yeah. One time I had 2 minutes before I was going on stage and Jamie Masada came down from Laugh Factory. He said, there's network in the house. You have to be completely clean. And if you know my act, it's not...
That's like a hello and goodbye, everybody.
It's like he wanted me to produce a miracle, like pull something out of my ass. So I actually did, though. And sometimes when you have to go clean, you come up with better words. Funny, it makes it funnier. So there were things that were... Yes, anding. That's our job.
Hello.
Just, yeah. I had 2 minutes to just mentally shift, and knowing that I have to tell the same jokes I prepared, but I have to change the words on the spot.
Yeah, some comedians use the cussing as a crutch, and they just overuse it. Yeah. I mean, I keep to say it now and then, but I, you know,
it was a good lesson.
Filippo does that a lot.
I just use it for emphasis.
Okay.
Anyway, so at the Life, did we not understand that word?
Yeah. No.
Emphasis.
Emphasis.
It's like Target. I got you. Man.
Versace.
He didn't go to kindergarten. He went to Enfonsis.
Anyway, so you've done TV as well and live. So, Dinah, could you talk about the difference between the two?
Well, television... As an actress, mostly.
Oh, okay.
As a stand-up, it's mostly live.
Okay. So far.
I mean, I've been hired because I was a comedian for TV.
Right.
But it was mostly for acting, which is scripted, and it takes a craft that a lot of other comics can't do.
Yeah, it's a different craft. I was surprised
acting,
that you... Yeah.
Acting is a... Yeah, that's one thing I wish I did when I was in college, when I took the acting class, because I said, I'm funny. I can do funny all day long. But then when you get behind that, you know, you get stuff. It's like, oh, wait a minute. This is... It's like, Craig, we want you to cry. I'm like, I don't cry.
I can cry.
You can cry?
On cue.
You can make me cry too, right?
And action.
Not right now.
Okay.
I'm not being paid.
Okay.
Okay. So earlier,
wait, wait, wait. Wow. We were getting paid.
I cry for cash.
Okay. I cry for cash. She has the sign. So earlier we were saying why we thought Craig Fraser was perfect for this life improvement workshop, and you. The funny thing is with you, it's like because you're a woman and because your act is a little blue, that moment you described where you had to like change it, right? And when you're in front of certain audience, you have to like you'll be able to do a lesbian audience on one
Lesbanese.
Day.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
that's a whole different audience.
Which country is that?
Okay. No, it's not a country. Okay. It's a people.
Sounds like a disease.
I got the Lesbanese.
Oh, now are you going to have the lesbians? No, it's not okay. So don't get me in trouble. Look at her shaking her head like,
why would I get you in trouble?
Because you said, anyway, she
back
said.
Back to PETA.
So, you know, like a big, huge, biggest lesbian crowd in the world on one thing, and then turn around and do like stand up in front of a dingy club kind of thing on the other, and then do like an old, you know, people's whatever. You know what I'm saying?
It's I just did comedy in New Mexico in a very conservative little town.
Right.
And shook shit up.
Now you're going to have to leave the show.
Oh, no cursing? Shook stuff up.
No, seriously. So that's changing like that and go with the audience.
On the fly.
And not every comedian does that. They have their act.
Well,
they only want to do their act.
Not to correct you, but I don't think that my comedy, I wouldn't describe it as blue. I have a lot of material, and a lot of it is... I go from social commentary, personal stuff from my childhood, racy. It can get a little racy, but it's very intelligent. I'm talking about stuff that's happening right now. There's a lot of social commentary or political climate. So it's not just to be blue to be blue.
Right.
That to me is very cheap, and it cheapens what I do, and it's not what I do. I'm somebody who does it all.
Rainbow.
I'm the rainbow. Rainbow
I've got
bright.
All the colors in me.
All the colors.
Well, which actually we should bring up this point, actually, because people can follow you on Facebook. And that's one of the things you're doing on Facebook and on Twitter. It's like what's happening right now, not just in your life, but out in the world, you're putting out there and saying, this is the face of this. This is what this looks like. This is what's happening right over there. And on some of these things, there's a funny commentary. I have to say that. But also on some of them, it's just like Dinah being real. This is...
Yeah, it gets real. I think my... I turned 42, and I know, I look amazing. But
yes, you do.
I think I feel like my days are numbered at 42. Even though, whatever, just like a feeling that I have where I know that I'm trading my days for something and I might as well trade them for something that makes a difference. I'm unafraid to speak my mind at this point. I've my interviews, other podcasts, like things that I was afraid to say before, I'm just not afraid. I feel like the just with the environment, climate change, everything, anything could happen. We just had a tsunami warning for the California coast.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. To pretend as if we have tomorrow or that it's promised is completely false. So I'm here to make a difference. I have a lot of talents and I use all of them. And every day is an opportunity. I'm a little bit of a fighter too. It's not, my commitment is love and unity, but I'm ready to scrap for it. I will take on anyone.
To that point, the things that you're saying most often are what most people are thinking, and yet going back to that.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in it, and I'm one of these people that's they'll say, you know, to most comedians, this is who we are: is that we are saying the things that others are afraid to say. I just, for whatever reason, I don't have that kind of fear. I was born into a family where being fearless was thought of very highly.
Yeah, I think we're also, everybody's afraid to talk about race in America now.
And I'm not.
And I think people, the biggest problem I grew up in all white town, but as an entertainer, I meet a lot of white people saying, they say, oh, you're different. I'm like, in what way? That I I speak the King's English. I'm a nice guy. What I mean, because a lot of people's perception of people is from the media, and the media portrays blacks as, oh, they're gangsters. I mean, just do this one time. Listen to the news. Watch the news, and then see how they describe a black guy that did something and a white person that did something.
It's our job to play with stereotypes to break them up. You know, I grew up on the opposite spectrum. I grew up, all my friends were black. I grew up, went to high school with Tupac Shakur. My parents were in civil rights. I'm a product of those radical hippies that changed the world. I mean, Steve Jobs was wearing Birkenstocks, just like the same kind my dad and my mom were wearing. Mm. Came from that same Berkeley, Telegraph Avenue, just, you know, people that the rest of society were those dirty hippies. Well, those dirty hippies flipped this thing on its axis, and a lot of change came from that. So I have come from a deep understanding that if you're saying anything real, you're going to be alone. You're standing alone in the face of no agreement. A lot of times my posts, I defended the fat Jew because so many people were like, thought that his fame that he rose up from Instagram, when that was just a besides a point, like he owns a winery, like all these other things that built him. He wasn't just this complete plagiarist that all these comedians wanted to tear him down for. I stood alone. People were attacking me for defending him. I don't mind standing alone. I think more people need to do that and stop being afraid of not being accepted. It's like, I feel a lot of times like I'm the only adult in the room when actually people are perceiving me like the obnoxious child, you know, because I'm a comedian. But the truth is like everyone's running and I'm standing there of Xena the warrior princess ready to go. Where's everybody else hiding under the covers?
They're hiding in their box. Like everybody's gotten so set in their beliefs that they've so identified with whatever box it is, whatever label
they life changes, guys. This is an amazing time for me to be an artist. And I, because so much is changing, I'm come from the like romanticizing this Archie Bunker, not PC character. With this huge, massive change that's happening with the millennials who don't want, who need us to be more PC, and there's all this change of what can and can't be said. A lot of my act is changing because because there's so much racial tension in the climate right now. People are getting more and more PC, so there's this incredible dance and on a what is that? The wire, the circus wire, the you know, you were
the high wire.
The high wire. I feel like I'm on the high wire of what is the conversation right now. And I'm in the trenches doing it. I'm at the Comedy Store. I can feel that a year ago, my set, the un-PC things don't fly today.
Mm. In a year?
In what? Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. Craig, are you seeing the same thing? Like within a year, things?
Oh, yeah. Same thing. I mean, you got a black president and everybody think the world was going to be, racism has ended, but all they did was elevate racism because their true colors came out. It's like, here you got a black man from that's a graduate of Harvard trying to do things. But he was very, he wasn't ready for the fight he was going to get in Washington. He came in with the kumbaya, we'll all work together. And these politicians are like, no, buddy, this is not how this works. It's going to be our way or no way. And you know, they just, I think we forgot about just humanity of caring for people. That's the difference.
That's what I think happened, because it's not even that their true colors came out. I don't think people even know what the heck their true colors are anymore, because so it's been so misused, it's been so construed. There's so much say something in order to get the looks or the clicks or the whatever the case may be, and the media being divisive just so they have something, so they're relevant in the way of being on air, that the truth has been completely lost.
Well, and because most people have inherited their views, and there hasn't been anyone sort of holding them to change, looking and examining their belief systems.
Right. Because racism is taught. Nobody just wakes up and becomes a racist.
It truly is.
Somebody has to tell you, you know, and I've never understood that. I've been around the world. I've gone, and there's some terrible people in every form, shape, color. But just to not like somebody because, you know,
of their form, shape, or color.
I mean, I had a buddy of mine when we were in high school growing up, and I thought these parents were the coolest folks. We went over to the house for a party. I said, man, your parents are so cool. They, you know, we're over the house kicking. Then they found out that their daughter liked my buddy, and they kicked her out the house. Kicked a 17-year-old girl out the house because she liked a black guy. I was like, wow, this is crazy. life-changing.
Yeah. And you know, what was interesting is actually, you know, come to think of it today during our meeting, our team powwow, whatever, for this weekend's Life Improvement Workshop, there were the two of you, and listening to the two of you, I mean, it's very inspiring to, you know, how you as a black man comedian, you as a female comedian, white female comedian.
Jewish.
And Jewish white female comedian. Did I miss anything?
Multi-ethnic.
Multi what?
Multi-ethnic.
Multi-talent.
Jewish, Caucasian. Go on.
I wish we had this on video. Just as, did you see her whole? Anyway, she's still doing it. Whatever she's doing, it she's doing it. Is that
out.
A come on? What is that? It's
I don't know.
I like it.
Beaming.
Stupid.
I'm feeling herself or whatever. Well, or touching.
You're
the
Italian.
Microphone.
I don't have any of that.
So where was I? Oh, and then, you know, Rick Overton, right? I mean, powerhouse, you know, and another generation, right? And then with Cato Kaelin, who comes from all the way something completely different. And then for all of us to be sitting in that room all with our different and all agreeing on like everything.
Yeah, core issues. It really gets down to that truth. You know, the core issues where we're meeting is stripping it down to this ability to connect and at this level of truth and really kind of get past that, you know, that rhetoric and yet have some fun with it.
Yeah, people just don't interact with people. You could end racism if folks talk to each other. That's the bottom line. Have a conversation. Yeah, you may have a different view. I may have a different view, but you too many people have their view and they'll refuse to bend in any way. I mean, it's like when most Republicans get all their news from Fox TV. So then that's what they listen to. That's what you hear them spewing this talking point. So unless if you're not willing to listen to the other side, there can't be no change. Change can't come about if you say this is my way or the highway, and I'm not bending. You know, society's going to be really in trouble.
I'm not sure if anything would change if Ann Coulter and I were in the same room. I'm not sure that.
She needs to eat.
She's thirsty, too.
Okay, I don't know who, not to change the subject on that, but I don't know who was it that said it. But as we're coming to a close here, something actually really awesome was said. I think actually Rick Overton said it. And then Dinah, you picked it up and then took it to the whole next level. What, do you remember what it was?
When I was just all, yes, and?
Yeah, that's right, actually. When you were all that and a bag of chips. What was that?
That conversation disappeared. No idea. But I remembered my line.
What was your line?
Yes, and.
that's like a tenet of it.
But the whole point of what you're saying was like, we were working cohesively as a team.
Right, that's true. Nice save. And then I'll feed you a piece of the line. But it was something like Rick said that, well, you said the fact that you liked the fact that I wasn't teaching this, quote unquote, on my own, that we were doing this as a team. Like we were all equal in this and we were all going to be out on, you know, in front. And Rick said that's kind of what...
It's making stars.
Yes, that's what you said.
Making stars of your...
Right. Okay, so...
Oh, yeah, make the person...
Make the other person the star.
Yes.
If you want the thing to work, don't worry about your job. Get out of your head and...
I said, boy, it really applies to life.
Stop.
Right?
If you're nervous, if you're thinking, if you're in your head, then your focus is not on the other person where it should be.
Mm.
Right? And for us, that's going to be our participants.
Right.
Right? They're the star.
And Mark said...
We're brought up to compete. You know, we're brought up to win and to better, you know, to be the best. And it's different. We're not brought up to make...
Well, that's something we know in comedy, too. Like, there's such a fierce dog-eat-dog competitiveness but there's also this other side to it that people don't talk about, which is all this camaraderie and support, and that's really who I am.
True.
And if you're in... Yeah, to point out that I'm a female comic, I came in with this... who I'm going to be is supportive and empowering of other female comics, and I have measurable success with that.
Well, every week you do a show at...
Every week I do a show on Sundays at the Comedy Store, and every Tuesday I do a show at the Gallery headroom for patients, medical 420 patients.
And you bring in other comics.
Always, yes. I bring in the
Best of the best.
I'll be there this Tuesday with her.
Nice.
In fact, that's right. I'm so excited.
I'll be there in the audience.
Thank you for that. Yes. And it's if you're a patient, then there's a special address that we don't post. We keep it just to protect. You know, California's legal, but it's not as legal as it should be and will be. Mm. So a lot of these places that are above board are being shut down. So we don't give the address out. Mm. It's a private members only club.
You just got to know. Yeah.
Just got to know.
Yeah, but can I say one thing? As a female comedian, I know you've got it hard because there's a boys club, and it's, and the truly funny female comedian, I guess maybe I'm biased because a lot of female comedians, it's tough for me to really get into, but there's a few funny ones that I know, and it's like they can really hang with the boys. That's what you want to see. So you try not to be the same. You don't want to be the same because it's like a cookie cutter. It's like, come up, they do the same act. You're like, come on, who's going to be different? Who's going
to
change?
Well, I always say you have to be kind of part guy to do this. Exactly. But then one day it dawned on me that actually men that are stand-up comedians are behaving, they're more expressing their female side because their female side is the one that loves to do all that chatting.
Yep.
If you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Okay. So whose club is it?
Okay. The Comedy Store is public though, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. That is public. And it is in the Belly Room every Sunday with Adam Barnhart, myself, and a revolving clowns.
A cast of comedians, yes. I think we should say. So you can follow her on Facebook, Dinah Leffert, DinaLeffert. Follow her on Facebook. Actually, she's on Twitter with the same name. She uses the same name, interestingly enough.
To the chagrin of my dad. I'm like, why didn't I get a stage name? Sorry, Dad.
Oh, that's funny. Actually, sad but funny. Craig Frazier at Craig Frazier Comedy. That's Craig, CraigFrazier comedy.com.
You won't see me at the Comedy Store. I boycott that. But you can catch me on tour with D.L. Hughley.
Okay.
All over the country. So I stay on the road.
And people can catch the two of you along with Rick Overton and Matt Murray and Cato Kaelin this Saturday.
This Saturday. Be there. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. At the Hollywood Improv. And for more information, go to Improv Moment.
See, he boycotts the Comedy Store, but I'm there on purpose to change the culture there. I don't like it as much.
Please do.
Nice. Interesting. But we will be at the Improv.
We'll be at the Improv. The Improv is a class act.
Exactly.
ImprovMoment.com. See you all there this Saturday. It's been a pleasure having you both. What an honor.
Thank you for having us. And
thank you. Bye,
happy
Philippe.
Birthday again.
Happy birthday, Dorothy.
And happy birthday, Dorothy.
Happy birthday to you.
I have a vagina necklace for you, Dorothy.
And now we have to pay royalties.
Oh, my bad. I do a lot of singing in my act, too. So
do you really? Yeah, good for you. Do you sing?
Dinah? I just harmonized with him.
Oh, no. I heard. Right, that was beautiful. Here. What was I talking about?
It was Ebony and Ivory.
We know Mark sing. Okay. Don't sing that song.
We don't have a budget.
We don't have a budget for that.
Okay.
So, although I'd love to hear it afterwards. When
watch
the cameras
your step.
Go off.
We don't have
actually,
insurance.
We have music. And we have Grant Malloy Smith on our show right after this. Please stick around to enjoy the American Roots singer-songwriter, Grant Malloy Smith, right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
The
Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@lifechangesnetwork.com.
And we're back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio. I'm here with Mark LeJour. And we, after this great interview now, get to hear some great music. And interestingly enough, our guest is an American roots singer-songwriter. And we've known many. We've never had one really on the show. So this is quite exciting and quite special. Today, it's Grant Malloy Smith, American roots singer-songwriter. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're glad you're here. We know you travel a lot, and we also know you don't live in Los Angeles, so I'm glad we were able to work out the schedule so you could be on the show today.
Yeah, that's great. Perfect timing.
So I have to ask you, it's interesting that I know you had been on the list at the beginning of reading about you, on the list for a Grammy nomination, like 16 or 17 times or something like that. And then later on, I was distracted, came back, and it said something about your Grammy. And then I thought, oh, he actually did win. And then I realized you were talking about your grandmother.
Right.
And so tell me how she weaves into this.
Yeah. I'm fortunate enough to have the better of the two kinds of Grammys. There's the little statue, which would be nice to have. I don't have any of those. Uh-huh. But I did have two wonderful Grammys that were my father and mother's mothers. And one of them in particular, my mother's mother, was from Hazard, Kentucky. And she instilled in me a love for rootsy kind of music. She loved bluegrass and the old style country that she grew up with in the 1930s and 40s, that kind of thing. So she, you know, at the time though, the whole country was going crazy over the Beatles when I was a little kid, like I was. So I was torn, but I had one foot on the, I wanted to be a long-haired rock and roll star, even though I was only five. And my other foot was I wanted to be, you know, a country guy, like Hank Williams or something like that.
Well, and you're not a country guy. And that's interesting because, you know, you first of all, you inspired everybody in the studio. This has never happened before. Actually, we did not talk about this. But we all are familiar with your music and your look and your videos. And so you wear a country hat, a cowboy hat, and some other like boots and all that. And so today, Dorothy walked in with her cowboy hat. I walked in with mine, and unbeknownst to us, Mark walked in with his and his boots and his. He's even got the big belt buckle on.
Yeah,
I love bluegrass. I forgot the boots. I totally don't match, but I have them.
So, I appreciate that. Thank you.
So you inspired that. So, but it's different. Tell us American roots. That's about.
Yeah. American roots is sort of a sub genre, I guess you could call it, of country music. Country music being the overarching theme or genre, but American roots is more of a mashup of folk music and old style country. Even bluegrass fits into there. Some people are strictly bluegrass, other people are strictly folk, some people are, you know, strictly country. But if you're neither, if you're not any of those exactly right on target, then you get put into this nebulous category called American roots.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is what.
So, like, if you're a little bit country and a little bit rock and roll, that's
no, it makes you an Osmond. Marie Osmond.
Don't give me that look, Mark.
It's a whole different storytelling.
Yeah, that's really different. My teeth aren't big enough to be Osmond. Or straight enough.
You've been waiting all week to use that.
No, it just came to me. I thought it must have come. I bet Mark's going to say it, so I better say it. But I was wrong about that. Yeah. All right. So actually, there's more I want to ask you, but I do want to hear what you have to share with us today. What's the first song we're going to hear?
I'm going to do a song today. First one I'm going to do is called Partners.
Partners?
Partners.
Okay. Is this a good Partners thing?
Very good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I won't explain it.
Oh, okay.
The song explains itself very easily.
And it's interesting because you are a word man. You're very much about lyrics.
Yes.
So,
and the reason I didn't want to explain it was, I will if you want, but I think that if you write a good lyric, it should explain itself.
Okay.
If you write a lyric and everybody goes, wow, that was really cool. What was that about?
Right.
Then maybe you need to work on those lyrics a little bit more, unless you're intentionally trying to write one that no one can figure out. And that's also valid.
And makes people think.
Sure.
Yeah, but then there are the singers that are singing that could be a good lyric or bad lyric, you just don't understand. Anyway, but that's a whole other singer.
Different story.
Right? Okay, so here we have Grant Malloy-Smith singing Partners on the Life Changes Show.
Thank you. Here we go.
In a different situation, in another place and time, if I only had the patience, I don't know what my heart might find. We were put here for a purpose, so we got to make it go. Please don't tell me it's all worth it. What I've been through, you just don't know. Now that my eyes are clearing, I can finally see who I am. I'm your partner. I'm just your partner. When the walls come down around you and the bricks are at your feet, when the enemy has found you and you know that you're in too deep, I'll be there before you know it. As they say, I've got your back. Sometimes I may not show it, but I need you, and that's a fact. Now that my eyes are clearing, I can finally see who I am. I'm your partner. I'm just your partner. I'm your partner. I'm just your partner. We are partners. We are partners.
Thank you for that. Grant Malloy-Smith. That made me think of some very special people in my life. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That felt good.
A lot of them are here in the studio.
Indeed.
That's what song should do.
Grant-Malloy-Smith.com.